helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel. One of the grievances the signers of the Declaration of Independence had against King George was he kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. While technically not an army, which Noah Webster defines as a collection or body of men armed for war and organized in companies, battalions, regiments, brigades, and divisions under proper officers, a quick look at modern police forces makes me wonder. Does it make a difference if the body of men and women are organized in companies, battalions, regiments, or in squads, precincts, and districts? Does it matter that federal law enforcement is kept among us without the consent of our state legislatures? Based on the recent actions of the FBI, ATF, and DOJ, along with the legislation to expand law enforcement arm of the IRS, I have to ask, has the federal government turned America into a police state, or are they merely keeping standing armies among us? Well, hello there, everyday Americans. Paul Engel here with the Constitution, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I am so glad you could join me today. You know, I've had this thought ongoing, and it really is a question of, the current state of law enforcement. I mean, sure, we could look at the size of it, but look at how they've militarized law enforcement. You know, when I was a kid, men and women walked around in a simple uniform, and in New York City had a blue uniform with a cap, and they looked like, well, what you'd expect a police officer to look like. You know, where I live today, for the most part, men and women, the sheriff's deputies, they wear uniforms, but they're also wearing vests on their uniforms. They're looking much more tactical. Now, again, I can understand there's a situation where you need tactics, but doesn't that kind of put off people? See, again, when I was a kid, your local beat cop, well, he was known by many of the locals and the businesses. They were a part of the community. Now they seem to be more riding around in cars and separate from the community. And then we look at what some of these law enforcement agencies, quote-unquote law enforcement agencies, especially those from the federal government, they're acting less and less like more like law enforcement and more like that standing army we were warned about. Now, part of what got me thinking along this way was actually the title, the article, the headline of an article from the American Thinker. And as I always warn you, you never trust the headline, right? The headlines frequently are written, I think, to grab attention, if not deflect from the actual purpose or the actual data in the article. But what caught my attention and why I flagged this for the show is the title is called "The Madness of America's Ruling Class." And that's one of those words that grabs my attention. See, I thought America didn't have classes. I mean, we don't have inherited classes, right? You're not born a lord or a serf or a peasant. But think about it. The idea of a ruling class in America is antithetical to everything that our founders created. We have servants, not rulers, but we have been trained both by action and by, I believe, you know, by our government and its education system to see them as ruling over us rather than there to serve us. And take that to its next logical extension, right? At least from the subject of today's episode about a police state or a standing army. Think about how often we've seen videos of interactions where law enforcement is ruling over the people in their area, where they're making stops simply because they want to or they think so. They have no probable cause, but they search and seize anyway. And the American people for the most part, submit to it. And those few who stand up and say, excuse me, no, you need a warrant, you need an exigent circumstance, you need probable cause, well, they're often harassed by the very people that are supposed to be there to serve them. So it's bad enough. I mean, the article went on to talk about the effectiveness of the Biden administration and certain other members of the administration. But really, isn't the problem the fact that the author starts out, or at least I would say it was the editor that wrote the headline, but the very first sentence of the article is, the ruling class has failed immensely. The very idea that America has a ruling class rather than we the people shows that something fundamentally has changed in the mindset of many Americans. And that is, we believe we are electing rulers rather than hiring servants. And again, what we see a lot in law enforcement. Or for example, the ATF apparently has been targeting federal firearms licensees, also known as FFLs. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with this, when you purchase a firearm at a retail establishment, they receive a license from the federal government. That makes them a federal firearm licensee. Now, granted, that's unconstitutional. Right? You're basically saying that Congress has made a law that says in order to sell to a citizen to exercise a Second Amendment right, you must be registered and approved and blessed by the federal government. To me, saying that is tacking pretty close to the wind when it comes to the Second Amendment. But that's not my focus here. See, under Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 923, which deals with federal firearms licensing, and again, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, and includes, by the way, issuing licenses. The Attorney General may revoke a license if the license holder has willfully violated any provision of Chapter 44, which is that whole section that deals with federal gun laws, which is, of course, unconstitutional. Now, back in the June of 2021, Joe Biden announced that he wanted his administration to implement a zero-tolerance policy for FFLs who violated the law. And what's apparently happening, at least according to Representative Mark Green, who sent a letter to the ATF, BATFE is its full proper name, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, generally abbreviated as ATF, wanted to explain why they've basically been charging people not for willful violations, as 18 U.S.C. 923E requires, but for negligent violations. It's the difference between doing so intentionally and unintentionally, what's referred to in the legal realms as mens rea, bad mind. And he's asking why the ATF has suddenly rewritten the law and said, listen, we said you could prosecute them, that the Department of Justice could revoke a license for willful violations, not for negligent violations. But this is how a police state works, right? We take the law and then we just reinterpret it to fit our needs. Sadly, this is something the Supreme Court has not only allowed, but in many cases encouraged by the way it has gone around taking the law and reinterpreting it to what it seems to be fit. So here you are, you're a federal firearms licensee. You're doing your best to comply with an outrageously complicated system with lots of paperwork, I'm probably some contradictory requirements, or at least difficult to comply with requirements. And the ATF says, well, listen, I know the law, you know, the ATF says, listen, you forgot to file this piece of paperwork, or you didn't file it in time, or, and rather than saying, listen, this is, you made a mistake, they arrest you as if you had willfully violated the law. Again, a characteristic of a police state, using the law as a weapon rather than simply using it as simply enforcing it as written. But there really is so much more. See, I believe as part of the application to be a federal firearm licensee, you have to basically give up your right to be secure against unreasonable searches and seizures. You have to say your business is open to the ATF at any time where they can come in and inspect. So we just use federal law to violate the U.S. Constitution. Because remember, you have a right to be secure from unreasonable searches and seizures. Why is it reasonable to search a location when you don't have any probable cause that something may even be going wrong there? But again, this is the concept of a police state. We take the law and we use the law as a weapon. So we have Second Amendment violations, we have Fourth Amendment violations, and that's just the federal side. Don't forget you have the entire issue at the state and local levels where there are rules and regulations as well. And what you see are more and more businesses being regulated out of existence, being put upon by law enforcement because, well, they're not favored by the current administration. The arbitrary application of laws, the arbitrary reinterpretation of laws, it's one of the very ideas we fought against, but that's the way America is today. So I ask you, when law enforcement is less about enforcing the law and more about ruling over the people, isn't it getting awful close to a standing army? See, in my mind, it is. See, I have to wonder, because the other sense of army is a great number, a vast multitude, as in an army of locusts or caterpillars. Have we got an army of law enforcement? I talked, I think it was yesterday, about there are more arms-carrying members of the federal, there are more bureaucratic agents carrying firearms with the ability to use lethal force than there are U.S. Marines. Memory serves, there are 186,000 members of the U.S. Marines. There are over 200,000 bureaucrats, agents of the federal bureaucracy that have been given law enforcement power, the ability to carry arms and to, quote unquote, execute law. Sounds an awful lot like a standing army to me, right? A vast multitude of officers, which sounds an awful lot like one of the other grievances that we have that our framers had against the king. So he has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Sounds very similar to what we have today. Think you've got 200,000 law enforcement officers, 200,000 armed agents that are part of the executive branch of the federal government. Sounds like swarms of officers designed to harass our people. And now they say they're there to protect us, but seems more often than not they're being used to harass us, to eat out our substance, to kill us with regulations and fines for not following this litany of regulatory nonsense. Makes me wonder, are we a police state or are we living with a standing army? And that's what I want to spend the rest of the day thinking about. I've got a break coming up in a couple minutes. So before I dive into that, I want to really spend some time and think about the police state police states and standing armies. Now, according to the Free Legal Dictionary, a standing army is a permanent army maintained in times of peace and war. And that remember that in the Constitution, the funding for the army, right? People often say military, but it's actually constitutionally it's the funding for the army has to be renewed every 2 years. Under Article 1, Section 8, Congress can fund an army, they can raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money for that use shall be for longer term than 2 years. And this is whole kabuki theater of, we have a standing army, both between the Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. But we go through this kabuki theater, and that every 2 years, we effectively, we can't appropriate money for more than 2 years, so that's not technically a standing army. Technically, if nothing happens, the military loses its funding with 2 years, and I guess the theory would be it would collapse. But if I go back to the legal definition of a police state, a state in which the government exercises rigid and repressive controls over the social, economic, and political life of the people, especially by means of a secret police force. Well, okay, we're not dealing with a secret police force, but it certainly does seem that the federal government is exercising rigid and repressive control over society, over the economy, and over the political life, in fact, the general life of we the people. Now, as I said, I have to take a break, but before I do, I want you to take a look over at Healthy Cell. So HealthyCell.com is a leading innovator in nutritional supplements for cellular health. They've got a lot of products. One I've used a lot lately is the Immune Super Boost. See, I've been on the road a lot. I've been meeting a lot of people. I've been exposed to a lot of things. Immune Super Boost helps support your immune system while you're on the go using nutrients in a travel-ready gel pack. There's over a dozen nutrients in one supplement. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 25% off your first order just by using the code Out Loud at checkout. So go to the website, healthycell.com, put your order together, fill out your cart. When you check out, use the code Out Loud. They'll give you 25% off. So once again, that's healthycell.com. Be sure to use the code Out Loud at checkout. It lets them know that you listen to America Out Loud, and they'll give you 25% off your first order as a thank you.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited-time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Whoa, wait. We wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses, and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution, teach the rising generation to be free. I'm so glad you could join me. You know, we're talking about the difference between a police state and standing army and asking, does one or the other, or effectively both, apply to the United States today? Now, I've already pointed out, all right, technically, we're not dealing with a standing army because an army has a specific definition. But we certainly are tacking pretty close to that. The question is, are we a police state? A state where government is exercising. Think about it. Does the federal government exercise control over the social aspects of this country? Well, yeah, they're going around saying you can't talk about certain things because they're dangerous. They're telling you you can't exercise your rights without our permission. They talk control of the economy, right? They tell you what you can spend money on. They incent you to buy things like solar panels and electric cars while try to disincent you from purchasing gasoline vehicles or incandescent light bulbs. And if you look at the political life, well, the entire rigid structure we've created for hiring employees was all established by governments at different levels. So yeah, in many ways, America is very much looking more and more like a police state. And if there is a secret police, they're not truly secret, but they certainly are acting that way. It has to be the FBI. In fact, the DOJ in general. Now, there's an allegation that a lawsuit was filed by American First Legal against the FBI. And they claim the FBI, they want the FBI's communication with Facebook. See, when Mark Zuckerberg, head of Meta, originally Facebook, when he was being interviewed, he made on a podcast, it was Joe Rogan podcast, he said that the FBI sent them a warning that there might be some Russian disinformation coming that way. Facebook took the Hunter Biden laptop story as just such information. And in doing so, they have manipulated they impacted, shall we say, the 2020 election. And again, not the first time. Remember, in 2016, you had the FBI playing games with the 2016 election, presidential election, based on how they treated the charges against Hillary Clinton. First, they weren't going to say anything because they didn't want to impact the election. Then they did say something because they said they didn't want to impact the election. They're deciding what information and when the American people should have in order to determine how they instruct their states to decide who to elect for president. Sounds an awful lot like the actions of a secret police, does it not? Now, what Mark Zuckerberg describes in the podcast to me is not meddling, right? All they said was, hey, we believe there may be some Russian disinformation coming your way. The question is that all the communication? Was there more? See, we already have the White House admitting they were communicating with Facebook, the Biden administration, in order to get them to censor information that they don't like. Is it possible that the FBI was doing that beforehand? I don't know about you, but I'd certainly like to find out. That seems like a very important piece of information. Now, some of the people from the FBI, the team that communicated with Facebook, have been identified. Facebook's Meta CEO now, Mark Zuckerberg, stated that two officials from the FBI's, the Foreign Intelligence Task Force, I believe, Laura Demlo and Elvis Chan were involved in communications with Facebook and Meta. Now, Laura Demlo is a supervisor of the Foreign Intelligence Task Force, and according to some documents recently produced, she briefed the Cyber and Infrastructure Security Agency back in March of 2022. I asked about the goals for dealing with mal and disinformation. Demlo said that we need a media infrastructure that is held accountable. We need to early educate the populace, and that today, critical thinking seems to be a problem currently. That's right, you're talking about a federal law enforcement agency, a high-ranking member, saying that they need to hold media accountable. They need to make sure that they're giving the right message. Now, the other named person, Mr. Chan, was involved in, according to the San Francisco office, in helping to protect the U.S. elections in 2020. Now, how did he do this? Well, by working with private companies and election officials. According to Mr. Chan, we talked with all these entities I mentioned regularly, at least on a monthly basis, and right before the election, probably on a weekly basis, if they were seeing anything unusual, if we were seeing anything unusual, sharing intelligence with technology companies, with social media companies, so that they could protect their own platforms. That is where the FBI and the U.S. government can actually help companies. Yeah, I'll give that a maybe, right? At least in my mind. You know, it's one thing to share, hey, are you seeing some unusual activity? Yes, maybe that's something that you should be investigating. The FBI going to them, hey, we're seeing this information. They may be trying to attack your platform. Okay, maybe. But you see, here's the problem. See, the plaintiffs in this lawsuit claim that by helping social media companies, what they were actually doing, or one of the ways they were doing is by censoring and suppression of speech at the FBI's behest. In other words, the FBI, as part of the government, doesn't have, you know, is subject to the First Amendment and you know, it cannot deny someone freedom of speech. However, we're talking specifically about U.S. law here. Can the government enlist a third party to do what they are not legally allowed to do? No. And I go back to Title 18 of the United States Code, Section 242. Whoever, under color of any law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom, willfully subjects any person in any state, territory, commonwealth, possession, or district to the deprivations of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured or protected by the Constitution or laws of the United States, I'm skipping over things about different punishments and whatnot, shall be fined or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. See, it doesn't say any government actor. It says whoever. So let me ask you, did the people at Facebook, did the leadership at Facebook deny people their freedom of speech under color of law, statute, ordinance, regulation, or custom? See, that's the interesting part. Did Facebook break federal law by allowing the federal government under a custom or a regulation to tell them to suppress information? Now, in this case, the first and worst bad actor is most definitely the federal government. It's the FBI. If any member of the federal government is working with a third party to suppress speech or press, the government actor has committed a crime and really should be punished. And I mean fined and or jailed. But that brings an interesting question. Isn't Mark Zuckerberg? If Mark Zuckerberg was talking to the FBI and the FBI told them or encouraged them to suppress the speech and press of others. In other words, if Meta did this not because they didn't want that information on their platform, but because they were following directions from the government, they've committed a crime. That's going to be very hard to prove, right? Because all Meta has to do, all Zuckerberg has to do is say, listen, this was our policy. This type of we had a policy that says we didn't want this type of information on our platform. So that's very hard to prosecute. I know a lot of people want to focus on Facebook as the boogeyman here, but we really should be looking at, wait a second, did Chan, did Demlo, did they attempt to engage a third party to perform an act to violate the law for them? In which case, they should be prosecuted. Now, let's go back to the definition of a police state, one where a government exercises rigid and repressive controls over social, economic, and political life of the people. Well, what about the fact that, where are we here? The Department of Justice wants to jail five members of a Texas family for walking through the Capitol on January 6th. See, they're trying to get a plea deal with this family for parading, demonstrating, or picketing in a Capitol building. Now, the family says all they did was walk through the building. They did not commit any violent acts. They didn't damage any property. They didn't harass police. But prosecutors say they need jail time for walking through a public building. Now remember, Congress cannot make a law that prohibits the peaceable assembly, period. Now the question is, if these people in the Capitol were peaceably assembled, how can that be a violation of the law? The law that says it's illegal to parade, demonstrate, or picket in a governmental building, if the idea of simply walking through a building in a group is considered a parade and, you know, and that's now a crime, I'm sorry, that law is invalid. It's a violation. It's repugnant to the very idea of the Constitution. But what's happening, as we're seeing happen with a lot of the January 6th, is they are being, I believe, intentionally overcharged with the attempt to intimidate. Now, what's interesting is Assistant U.S. Attorney, was it Jennifer Rosani, says that the gravity of these offenses demand deterrence. This was not a protest. Really? Now, understand, the Capitol is a public building, which means it's owned by the public, which means, in part, it was owned by this family, by the Munn family. Yet they're claiming it is a crime to simply walk through it, that it must be deterred. This is the federal government, using intimidation to suppress any challenge of what it wants done. Again, remember, January 6th was a demonstration because people were complaining about the way the 2020 election was handled. Some were complaining about the states that had illegally appointed electors. Others complained about the states that they say there was fraud and they violated their own state laws in how they appointed and certified the vote of the electors. This was a demonstration. This was a petition to redress a grievance in front of the U.S. Capitol. Now, did some people enter the Capitol? Yes. Again, so what? That is public property. This idea that certain public property is off limits to the very people who own it is repugnant. It's repugnant to me. It's repugnant to the Constitution. And now to have a family that is charged, that is accused of nothing more than peacefully walking through the Capitol, to be looking at between 3 weeks for the kids and 30 days for the parents of jail time for simply walking through the Capitol, not harassing any law enforcement, not committing any property damage, not doing anything except walking through the Capitol, which they didn't want them to do. That, ladies and gentlemen, that's a police state. That is a repressive control over the social and economic and political life of the people. Ladies and gentlemen, this prosecutor should be charged with a violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 242. She is attempting to deprive them of their liberty and their property without due process. Their rights are not being protected. They're being attacked. And we, the people, for the most part, are standing by and letting it happen. I would, now again, I'm not this Munn family. I don't know the Munn family. In fact, you know what? If anyone knows the Munn family, have them please go to the website. I would love to have them on the radio to talk to them about what they did and what they're currently dealing with within the rules, right? There's an ongoing case, and I don't want to harm their case, but I'd like to talk to them, if for no other reason than to look at this and say, wait a second, you're the ones that are the victims of a crime. You aren't the perpetrators of a crime. How can you trespass on property you own? You can't. And the very idea that Congress can pass a law making it unlawful for you to assemble on public property peacefully is repugnant to the Constitution. That law is void. And I think that needs to be thought of. It's funny, I was just talking to my wife. I'm working on an article dealing with the dismissal of the Carter Page lawsuit. And she said, you know, I could probably make a business. If the lawyers would listen to me, I could make a business simply by looking at cases from a constitutional standpoint and giving them advice. I like the idea. I only wish that attorneys and judges will listen to me, or at least give me a chance. At least let me make an argument. So to the members of the Munn family, I'm open. If you'd like to hear, you know, have me, you know, provide some of my insight based on my studies, I'd be more than happy to. Absolutely free. I don't practice law. I don't pretend to be a lawyer. But I think it's important that we start turning the tables on government and using the levers of power we have to hold them accountable. Now, I've mentioned previously about the FBI raiding a home, guns drawn, and taking 11 pro-life activists charged for the crime of blocking an abortion clinic. Well, unless it happened in Washington, D.C. or on some other federal property, it's not a federal crime. Right? Congress, the Constitution did not delegate to the United States the authority to regulate access to abortion clinics or access to any business. That would be a state issue, not a federal one. But we've let our federal government go far beyond its rules before. But while they're arresting 11 activists for being pro-life, that same FBI is doing apparently little, if anything, to find out who committed the over 150 attacks on pro-life groups and churches. Who's dealing with investigating the firebombing or the vandalism? See, this is the police state. They're going to the weaponized law enforcement. We're going to take them and use them against our political adversaries and just ignore when it happens to be those we are politically aligned with. Now, listen, I've taken another break, but before I do, listen, if this type of information is something you enjoy, well, you can find me and other content creators at AmericaOutloud.com. In fact, stop there daily. Check out the articles, the news stories, the podcasts, the videos. Better yet, take that information and share it. Share it with friends and family and on social media. Help work with us. Help us all to secure the blessings of liberty, not just for ourselves, but for our neighbors as well.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the OutLoud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
Welcome back, everyday Americans, to rejoin the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution, teach the rising generation to be free. Today, we are talking, are we a police state or are we merely dealing with standing armies? Neither, by the way, is a good thing. But to a certain extent, I think both of them may be true. Now, remember, a police state is one where the government exercises rigid and repressive controls over social, economic, and political life of the people. So I have to wonder, is a government exercising rigid controls over these aspects of our lives? The answer has to be yes. If 2 years of COVID have taught us nothing more than this, the answer is most definitely yes. Remember, it was the government, both the federal government and state and local governments, that told you to wear a mask, that punished you if you didn't wear a mask. Go find the video of the Texas mom who was tased and handcuffed and dragged off for being outdoors 20 feet from anybody else without wearing a mask. Or what about the vaccine mandates, the attempt by both state and federal government, by the Biden administration, simply make up out of thin air an ability to force you to be a medical experiment, a medical guinea pig. You say, oh yeah, you got to take this. We're gonna mask you. We're going to shut you down. We're going to put you out of business. We're going to give you money for it. But it'll be a pittance of what it actually costs you. And then we're going to demand that you stick this in your arm. And oh, by the way, all while claiming that they can protect the vaccine manufacturers from lawsuit. By the way, they can't. Because the law that claims that you cannot sue a vaccine manufacturer violates the First Amendment. See, it prohibits you from petitioning the government for a redress of grievance. So that law is invalid. Isn't it about time we the people knew this? But remember, we had a federal government that said, this is the solution. It's not ivermectin. It's not hydroxychloroquine. It's not zinc. It's not vitamin C, all of which, by the way, work in most cases, at least according to the doctors that are actually using it. And by the way, tested in many cases, not all of them, most of them peer-reviewed, not all of them the random control test. But here you have the federal government in one Fauci being parroted by the media as if he had his hand in their backs, claiming that, no, you can't use that stuff. It's dangerous. It's been used on humans for 60 years, but no, that's dangerous. You have to use this vaccine, which is, again, safe and effective. Well, a Truth for Health Foundation report came out revealing just how badly your, not only Big Pharma, but your federal government, your state governments, the media, and many pundits have been lying to you. See, according to the report, not a single vial of this mRNA that was tested had the ingredients or dosage that comes from the labeling. Right? Remember, you've got to get those labels. They got to tell you what's in it, how much is in it, how much. Not one tested vial actually met the labeling requirements. In fact, some of the vials contained absolutely zero mRNA, while others apparently had massive doses. Gee, I wonder if that could be the cause of the sudden adult death syndrome we've been hearing about. There was a 10,000% variability in potency, meaning between the weakest dose and the most loaded dose, 100 times difference in the amount of mRNA in there. Oh yeah, by the way, in many cases, frozen vaccines were delivered to vaccination centers that were unfinished, meaning that the centers had to, quote unquote, finish the vaccines, but they're not equipped to do that properly, much less safely. But yet the government mandated, you must get this in your, we're going to recommend it, we're going to mandate it. There's a reason why I said, hell no. There's a reason why when the federal government issued me a subpoena, I said, fine, I'll show up for the subpoena, but I will not take the jab. Not. I won't ask them. I won't, period, end of story. If you want to assault my body to stick a needle in my arm, I will react appropriately. But you see, we're still dealing with a repressive government. Now, the Supreme Court has recently rejected a request to block New York City's vaccine mandate. Remember, it's not just a federal government. It's governments at all levels. See, a New York City police detective sued the city over the mandate that he, along with all the other city employees, take an experimental jab. Now, first, the New York State Supreme Court, or a judge on that court, blocked the mandate back in December of 21. But you see, that was dissolved by a U.S. appeals court. So the detective, Marciano, asked the Supreme Court to intervene. Now, his first application was rejected by Justice Sotomayor. Remember, every justice covers a circuit of the appeals court. So Sotomayor covered, I think it's the Second Circuit. And he refiled in September, and the application made it past the initial stages because it apparently went to Justice Thomas, and it ended up in front of the full court. But the court decided not to pick up and not to hear this case. Now, they don't explain why, which I find interesting. But here you had a state Supreme Court. New York State Supreme Court says you can't do this. Apparently, the state appealed to the federal government. I don't know on what basis, but they did. And right now, the federal government, the federal appeals court, is saying, yes, New York City can demand that you be a guinea pig as a condition of employment. Blatant violation of the Constitution, both of the state of New York and of the United States. But you see, once again, we see a repressive government. They're going to force people into compliance. And of course, I keep saying, and I'm going to repeat this up, if you're looking for a doctor, find your doctor, find a doctor that practices medicine, not bureaucracy. Because again, I keep seeing these stories of patients that go into the hospital that are killed by the bureaucratically prescribed protocol. See, in July 5th, 2021, Carolyn Carroll was admitted to a Texas hospital. She later died on August 1st of that year. And her family claims that is because the hospital protocols used to treat COVID-19. Now remember, most hospital protocols are bureaucratically assigned. In other words, it's not doctors necessarily doing this. Certainly not doctors that are treating these types of patients. They're coming from the CDC. They're coming from the FDA. They're being passed down through state medical boards, through hospital medical bureaucracies. They talk about the staff shutting down even the possibility of using ivermectin or other treatments, at least the ones recommended by frontline COVID critical care and doctors that have actually used these protocols. When they requested an ethics consultation on their mother's treatment, they received vague answers. In other words, the hospital basically kept their mother hostage, treated her the way they thought best, not what she wanted, not what the family wanted, what the government wanted. Treatments that are known to cause physical damage and death. Now, an interesting twist. In 2018, President Trump signed what's called the Right to Try Act into law. I find that interesting because you don't need the federal government to give you permission to try. The very idea that they think they have the authority to tell you what medications you can take proves nobody knows what the Constitution says. Not the lawmakers, not the lawyers, and not the people that are capitulating to this nonsense. But according to federal law, you have a right to try. If you have a life-threatening disease, you can try whatever method you want. But this mother and her family were denied that. So you have a family that has to fight tooth and nail to get access to the mother. When they asked, again, remember they asked for that ethics consultation? Yeah, a nurse called, not the children asking for the consultation, no, called their mother, who was lying in their hospital bed on a ventilator. I mean, this is crazy. But this is the nonsense that goes on. They had to fight to get treatment, even when they were allowed to dictate the treatment of their mother. The staff refused to follow the protocols. They were actually following the protocol from Dr. Peter McCullough, who I've talked to on this program before. See, the hospitals kidnapped this mother, kidnapped this woman, did everything they could to not treat them the way the family wanted, held her hostage as if she was the property of the hospital. And the treatment they provided ended up with her dying. Now, did it cause her to die? That's a hard statement to say. There are, I'm not sure if they used remdesivir, which has a history of killing people. I'm not sure. But they certainly did not treat this woman with medically effective treatment. They violated the Hippocratic Oath. They went beyond do no harm to doing damage. and this woman died. And this is one of a number of stories of men and women who entered the hospital to get COVID-19 treatment and were kidnapped by the hospital, where family was prevented access, where even people with the power to make medical decisions were denied access to the patient, where the decision of the person responsible for making medical decisions was overridden by medical bureaucracies that have led to death. Now, nothing will bring this poor woman back, and nothing will change the pain and heartache this family feels. But tell me, we're not living in a police state when the decisions about your medical treatment are not being made by your doctor, not even being made by your hospital, but made by a federal bureaucracy that does not legally exist. The CDC, the purpose of the CDC is to collect medical disease information, a power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, therefore one they don't have. My point isn't whether or not it's a good idea for them to do it or not. My point is they don't have that power. If we want them to do this, we have to delegate that power to them through the Constitution, and that would include limits on how they can exercise it. So I come back to my original question. Are we living in a police state, or are we living with standing armies? And I guess my answer has to be, in a way, both. Is America a police state? I would say undoubtedly at this point. Government runs and rules every aspect of our lives. Again, from what light bulbs we use, to what cars we can drive, to what food we can eat, to what medicines we can drive. They're even trying to control where we can say certain things and what we can spend our money on. We live in a police state. The question is, do we live with a standing army? Only in the most general sense, in that law enforcement, federal law enforcement, is being used as a repressive regime. In other words, they're not technically an army, but they sure are conducting the same types of missions that the army seems to be doing, that you would expect of a military at war. You break down the door of your opponent's homes. You take them in for questioning. You charge them with whatever you can. You hold people prisoner. These all seem pretty close to a standing army. But if we do live in a repressive regime, ultimately the reason is not Washington, D.C. It's because we, the people, allow it. Tell me, where were the neighbors of this Texas family while their mother was being held hostage in a hospital? Where are the other servants of the people complaining about the ATF violating the law and harassing federal firearm licensees? Where are the American people as the FBI, ATF, and DOJ in general run amok? And where Congress wants to arm over 200,000 bureaucratic agents. Most of us are more interested in what's going on in our favorite TV show. And that is why America has fallen into a police state. Not because the people have asked for it, although in many ways they did, but because we sat by and watched while tyrants took over. And, you know, let me modify that just a little bit. Remember, we allowed a system of elections to be put in place that limited your choices to the donkeys or the elephants. And we spend all of our time and all of our effort focusing on the donkeys and the elephants, and we never seem to focus on what they're actually doing. Because most of us, when it comes to the Constitution and our rights, are ignorant and apathetic. We don't know and we don't care. So here's what I'm going to ask you to do. If you have a situation where you think your rights may be violated, go to the website, constitutionstudy.com. Ask a question. Ask me. I'll give you my honest opinion. Again, I focus on the Constitution of the United States. I'm not that detailed in the constitutions of your states, so I'm looking primarily for those answers. And again, I'll give you my best answers from that. But here's the other thing you have to do. See, I'll do that part. Here's what you have to do. Read the Constitution. In fact, make a pledge. Today, you're going to read the Constitution. It's only 8,000 words. It's not that hard. It shouldn't take you more than 30 minutes. Then go ask me if you think a right is being violated. See, as John Jay said, it's by reading and studying the Constitution, we know when our rights are violated and are prepared to defend and assert them. It's time to stop waiting for someone else to protect our rights. It's about time for we the people to stand up and do it for ourselves. And if you can't be bothered with that, you can't be bothered with liberty. You might as well just realize that you're a slave. You're a subject. You're a serf. Get used to it. Now, if this got you going, if this really piqued your attention, spread the word. Let other people know. Weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, they can hear the Constitution Study on America Out Loud Talk Radio, heard on the iHeartRadio Network. You can listen to our shows on podcasts. They usually show up a day or two after they're heard on the radio. Listen on your favorite podcast app or on our apps for Apple, Android, or Alexa, or right off the website, off our media player. Do me a favor, though. If you're listening to the podcast, subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts for me. It helps other people find the Constitution Study. You can find all the links at the homepage on AmericaOutLoud.com. Do me a favor. Don't keep this to yourself. Share them. Join me as we work to share the blessings of liberty to everyone in this great country, from sea to shining sea.